State Government and Veterans Affairs Committee will come to order. State Government Finance and Veterans Affairs will come to order. First item on the agenda today is House File 1960, Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This bill comes before us today as part of the Help America Vote Act. Several years ago, dollars were given to counties to purchase new voting equipment and do some other upgrades. That deadline for spending the dollars has come coming due, and there are still some counties that have some expenditures to make. They want to make expenditures in the most efficient way possible, and so they're looking for an extension.
Thank you, Representative Halverson. I move that House File 1960 become before the committee. Representative Halverson, please continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry to jump the gun. I'm trying to use the best use of the committee's time. And on that note, I would like to just turn it over to my testifier here who can better explain the county's position.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Debbie Erickson. I'm representing the Minnesota Association of County Officers, and we urge your support for House File 1960. There are approximately 12 counties that still have funds remaining from the Help America Vote Act funds, and in most cases, these counties are looking to use these dollars as a way to replace aging equipment. The 12 counties constitute a total of just over $1 million, and they range anywhere from a few thousand dollars in Cook County to $380,000 in Ramsey County. So we would urge your support without the ability to carry over these funds for a longer period of time to look at purchases in 2015 or 16. Most of these counties do not have an alternative method to replace their equipment other than the local levy tax dollars.
And Representative Halverson, where did the money come from in the first place?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'll ask Ms. Erickson to answer that.
Ms. Erickson.
Madam Chair and Commissioners, this was part of the federal Help America Vote Act funds that were appropriated from the federal reserves. They were not dollars that were from the local or state at that time.
And Ms. Erickson, does the federal law allow us to carry the funds over?
Madam Chair, members, the law did require the state legislature to put in what the deadlines were of the funds. The current deadline is March of this year, of 2014. The extension is allowed by law.
Representative Leidiger.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Those were two of the questions I was going to ask.
Sorry.
That's okay. I have further inquiries. This sounds as though the county of Ramsey has the bulk of these dollars. Is there a reason why these have not been spent? I mean, this is something that was appropriated by the federal government a while back, I understand. We were supposed to have these spent by now, and that's a large amount of money. What happened?
Ms. Erickson.
Madam Chair, Representative, the counties had the option of how they wanted to spend the money, whether it was for equipment purchase and or maintenance. In most cases, county did the initial outlay to purchase their equipment and then chose to use the remaining funds to apply towards annual maintenance agreements, which can run anywhere from $10,000 to $30,000, $40,000 a year for the annual maintenance agreements. In Ramsey County's case, they chose to retain their original dollars to put towards equipment replacement, knowing that there was going to be a need for equipment replacement. There are also counties, for instance, such as Couchiching County, way up in the northern part of the state, still has $83,000 worth of funds available. Kitson County has $120,000, and in Kitson County's case, it's because the majority of their precincts there, with the exception of one city, vote by mail. Therefore, their equipment needs are a little bit less than what, say, Ramsey County or Dakota County or some other counties may be.
Representative Leidiger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the only way to extend this is by the legislature approving it, being signed off by the governor, I'm assuming, and that this is in federal law allowing each state to do what they want in terms of the extension of time.
Ms. Erickson.
Madam Chair, Representative Leidiger, yes. The federal legislation gives the states the requirements to put in place as to how the money or when the money shall be spent and by what time. The current law does state that it had to be spent by 2014. Any funds that were not spent were to be returned back to the state by that point.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative House.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question, why 2016? Why, I mean, they've had 4 years already to go out and get bids on equipment and get it done. I would think that you could probably do that in 4 months, or now you don't have, instead of 4 years, but now you're asking for two additional years. Why not next year? Why 2016?
Ms. Erickson.
Madam Chair, Representative House, 2016 being the fact that right now there are, and when you say you can do an RFP in 4 months, you can if the equipment has already been certified. To certify the election equipment is both a federal and a state process. And equipment certification, right now there are two systems in Minnesota that meet the certification needs. There are several counties that did go through an RFP purchase agreement within the last year that replaced their equipment in late 2013 for the 2014 election cycle. But there are other counties who have been looking at options as far as when the life cycle of the equipment is expected to be done. And most of these counties have determined that that will happen sometime by 2016, 2018. And those who have the majority of their monies left are looking at the fact that they are looking to purchase, start that purchase process in 2014, 2015. But the certification time frame of when that equipment that they are looking to purchase could be certified by could slow down that process. And every time that there is an upgrade or a change to an election equipment, it has to be recertified as well.
Any other questions? At this point, I renew my motion and recommend that House File 1960 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Mm-hmm. Any further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion is adopted. It's on its way to Ways and Means, Representative Halverson. Thank you.
Thank you,
Richard. Thank you, Ms. Erickson.
Thank you.
House File 2091, Representative Freeburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'd like to move House File 2091.
Okay. Please present your bill.
Sure.
And tell us where it began.
Sure. Well, it began with a fairly tragic situation. In your packet, you'll have a letter from Mr. Kelly Larson. Basically, under existing law, state employees are able to donate sick leave time to the vacation accounts for other employees who are caring for sick or dying relatives, and they are able to use the donated vacation time if they have used up all of their own. However, under current law, if the relative, it's more specific than that, it's a dependent child or spouse that they're caring for passes away, they're basically cut off at that point. So the bill makes a fairly simple change. It allows the employee, if they still have donated time available to them and they have used up all of their their own vacation time, they can use up to 2 weeks for bereavement and grieving and things like that. So Mr. Kelly Larson had a child pass away tragically and then basically found himself having to take unpaid leave. So there's the bill was heard in government operations, came here. There's a fiscal note now showing a minimal amount that can be absorbed by the agency. Mr. Richard Kajewski from the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees is here if members have any questions that I'm unable to answer, but that's the bill.
Are there any questions? Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a nice question, so you don't have to worry. I'm not coming at you with both barrels here. I kind of understand why there is any fiscal note, because this is leave that would be used eventually anyway. So how's the cost to the agency? Helen maybe can help.
Miss Representative Freiberg.
I had the same question, actually, when I heard that a fiscal note was requested. So I wasn't surprised to see that there was no net effect to the agency. So, but maybe fiscal staff can explain that more than I can. Okay.
Madam Chair and Representative, I think the
Ms. Roberts.
Madam Chair, I believe the fiscal note is just to illustrate that based on previous experience, there was this amount of time that would have been unpaid. And yes, you're right, that is being covered by vacation hours that would either be paid out maybe sometime far in the future. So I think this is more of an illustration of what those costs are. And again, this is just a general estimate. It's not for a specific agency, and that's why they showed it would be absorbed.
So we're trying to change the procedure, are we not, Ms. Representative Freiberg?
I don't even know if I'd say the procedure's being changed, just allowing a little more of the donated time to be used, and only in the event of the death of a child or dependent spouse.
Mr.
And only
Kajewski.
Up to 2 weeks.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. Richard Kajewski, the Public Affairs and Communications Director at MAPE. Currently, the procedure does not allow for anybody who suffers the loss of a dependent or child or spouse to use any of that vacation donation once there is a death for that qualifying individual. And so this really just allows them that bereavement time of up to 80 hours. That time has to be donated and sitting there, or it goes back to a pool, which currently happens today. So that time has to exist in order for anybody to use that time. And in addition, anybody who's on vacation donation or eligible for vacation donation today has already exhausted all of their vacation and sick leave. So in a sense, they reach a point where they are not eligible to receive any pay from the state of Minnesota for their job at the time they suffer a death in their family, either of their spouse or dependent child. So this just gives them a little bit of grieving time to get through that process individually.
Any further questions? Is there anyone that's here to testify for or against? Any state agency? Good. Representative Freiberg?
With that, I will renew my motion and recommend that House File 2091 be placed on the general register.
Okay. Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted.
Thank you
very much. Senate File 1952, House File 2285, Representative Lilly. I will move that Senate File 1952 come before the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is basically the product of the subcommittee of employee relations, and it ratifies 8 contracts of state workers that are classified, non-classified, and also covers 3 directors for our pensions. Gives them, I think, a 5% increase, which matches the other commissioners. And one thing that I'm kind of excited about, it, if the governor changes anything, there's a part of the bill and has to report to us what changes made on the commissions, or commissioners rather. But today I have Mr. Hubinger, and if you'd like, he could go through the bill. Madam Chair.
Okay, Mr. Hubinger, we talked about this last year when we made our appropriations for these contracts. But other contracts are in now, and so the bill is before us. Please present.
Madam Chair and members, I'm Greg Hippinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission and the Subcommittee on Employee Relations. As Representative Lilly indicated, the bill ratifies 8 contracts, 3 compensation plans, and 3 salary increases for the pension fund directors. Just to focus on the fiscal impacts of the contracts, contracts provide for 3% across the board increases on July 1st of 2013 and another 3% on July 1st of 2014. The contracts also provide for employees to receive performance-based increases, also known as step increases, each year for which they're eligible. About half of state employees are eligible for those increases. Those increases vary depending on the labor contract. They vary between 2 3/4% for the AFSCME contracts to about 3.5% for the MAPE contract. The other major fiscal impact of these contracts is that effective January 1st of 2015, employees will be required to pay 5% of the premium for their health insurance. That results in a savings to the state of about $17 million. The contracts have an impact, a fiscal impact on this biennium of about 4.65%, and cumulatively have an impact on the next biennium of about 6.67%. As Chair Murphy indicated, agencies have already received their appropriations for their biennium, for this biennium, so the cost of these contracts are within those appropriations.
Any further discussion? Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Hubinger, you just cited that we'd have a $17 million savings, and that's in a biennium?
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, yes, that's the savings in calendar year 15. So it's half of that is in the 15 biennium, half would be in the 16 biennium.
Madam Chair, follow up.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Hubinger. Can you tell me what this contract, if this, I'm assuming it will, is ratified, what's the cost of this contract excluding the savings?
Mr. Hubinger.
Madam Chair and Representative Benson, we have a tracking sheet that the subcommittee maintains that calculates the cost of the contracts, an estimated cost of on this biennium of about $252 million. If you didn't count the savings from the insurance premium, that'd be about another $7.5 million in cost in this biennium.
Madam Chair.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I think it just needs to be noted, in fact, that there's a generous raise in here. So before we slap ourselves on the back for finally getting individuals to pay for part of their premiums, which we still haven't, as far as I know, required that legislators pay for any of their, that we're really, as a state, paying for these with a large increase. So I make sure that it's noted.
Is there any other discussion? Representative Lilly, I renew my motion that Senate File 1952 be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Is there any further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Representative Lilly, Mr. Hubinger.
We're gonna miss Representative Benson in his retirement.
Representative Newton. He doesn't take the seat. Yeah, we have to take the camera both. We have to pay down first.
Keep it at 9/11. Okay.
Representative Newton.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I would like to move House File 28-12.
Okay. Please present your bill and your guests.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With me today, I have Dr. David O'Fallon, who is the Executive Director of the Minnesota Humanities Center, and Trista Matas-Castillo, who is the Director for Veterans Affairs at the Humanities Center. Madam Chair,
excuse me a minute, though.
Pardon me?
Ms. Matas-Castillo, this is a new position.
Yes, ma'am.
Welcome.
Thank you.
I like the promotion that Representative Newton gave me, but I'm the Veterans Voices Program Officer at the Humanity Center.
Wonderful. Yeah. Welcome back. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Welcome back, Mr. Fallon. O'Fallon.
Madam Chair, the this bill, in essence, proclaims the month of October in the state of Minnesota as Veterans Voices Month. And what it does is it heightens the awareness of our school children, our communities, our government agencies of the value that we have for our veterans in this state. You know, we have Memorial Day in May where we tend to honor veterans who have fallen. And then in November, on the 11th of November, which used to be Armistice Day when I was a kid, we now have veterans' memorials also. However, we don't have a time when the kids are all back in school and they're not off on holidays like the 11th of November or Thanksgiving, where we can devote a month to veterans and highlight their accomplishments and what they do in our communities. And with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to turn this over to Dr. O'Fallon.
Dr. O'Fallon.
Madam Chair and members, thanks very much. Brief recap. You might remember we appeared before this committee last year with the intention of the Humanity Center dedicating itself to a project called Veterans Voices. And that was to answer a particular need. You may recall, but there's no reason why you would, especially there's two veterans on the board of the Minnesota Humanity Center, Corinda Horton, who's a first Gulf War combat vet, and Gary Hendrickson, who's a Vietnam-era vet. They both said voices that are left out too often of public education, public awareness, public discussion is the voice of the veteran. So we collected a group of veterans and came out with the launch of the project, which was to celebrate veterans under the age of 40 who've recently served at an award ceremony that was held last September 11th at the Humanities Center. Why September 11th? Because a number of veterans said to us, everything that happens on that day makes us mad or makes us sad. We want to celebrate veterans as positive leaders, business entrepreneurs, creative people who are in fact contributing to the future of the state and the future of Minnesota. From that launch grew a dedication of the Humanities Center to develop a full program of veterans' voices. So we're looking at the broad array of needs. One of these needs that this proposal addresses is for simply greater public awareness and understanding of the importance of veterans' skills, knowledge, contributions to the creation of this great democracy. It's too often left out, and to be quite blunt, a day here and a day there doesn't meet this need. If this bill moves forward, our understanding is that the state of Minnesota will be the first of the 50 states to say, let's take a whole month where we look at the culture, the history, the contributions, and the positive voices of veterans in the nation. And the Humanities Center would be a contributor and a home base for this happening. We don't own it. It's a statewide initiative that I'm proud to have had the voice of the Humanity Center as a piece of the launch. And then we did, in fact, use a little bit of the funding from last year to bring on board someone who helped us think about this, who is herself a veteran, and that is, we asked Trista to join us as our program officer for our Veterans Voices Initiative. And with your permission, Madam Chair, I'd like to ask her to speak to this as well.
Thank you. Ms. Mata Castillo.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'm happy to be here and excited. The really great thing about what we're doing at the Humanity Center is that we are meeting a need and a gap that exists within the community, both in the veterans community and our greater civilian community, and understanding the relationship and the full reintegration of our veterans. You know, oftentimes veterans are pictured when you hear the word veteran as either a hero or a social problem. And as a veteran, I can tell you that most of us live our lives somewhere in the middle of that. And there might be a day that I'm a hero and another day that I might be a problem, but most of my life is lived in the middle, I'd like to say. And I have unique contributions, as do all the veterans on the committee and those currently serving, have unique contributions, and as well as we need to also understand our civilian community and where that comes from. And so this is really meeting a gap, is what's the human connection between our veterans and our civilians and where we go. We have an amazing Veterans Advisory Committee that helped us come up with this idea, and it came out of the veterans community wholeheartedly that said, you know, people don't know what Veterans Day is about. They think it's about a mattress sale or a used car sale, and that happens a lot. We monopolize, you know, holidays for an opportunity for a sales event, and it minimizes what it's really supposed to be about. And our school kids, I'm a Boy Scout merit badge counselor, and I recently sat down with a group of Boy Scouts. These are high school level Boy Scouts working on their Eagle Scout merit badges and certification. And the citizenship badge is what I was working on them with, and they had no idea that we are still at war. And that's appalling and shocking. And it really came out of that conversation, is what do our kids understand of service? What do they understand of the contributions of our veterans? And what do they understand what that means going forward? And so this idea was actually already piloted in Northfield at the Northfield High School. We have a veteran who's on our advisory committee that is a war literature professor and had previously taught at the Air Force Academy. And he said, what if we spend a whole month, the month of October? So why October? It's because it leads up to Veterans Day. It follows 9/11. It's a month dedicated prior to Veterans Day. So on Veterans Day, those kids that went through a month of war literature, they read books, they wrote poetry, they did their own examples. But on Veterans Day, it had a new meaning for them, and that was really important to them. And so this idea came out of that group of students and out of our Veterans Advisory Group to say, let's really understand our contributions and what we have, and it's a great way to celebrate our contributions.
Thank you. Representative
O'Driscoll. Thank you, Madam Chair. The question was partially answered why the month of October just moments ago. And I just asked just a kind of a pragmatic question. If we do October and we have Veterans Day in November, does that give the potential for school districts with everything that they're doing? We'll do some stuff in October. Let's pass on having a Veterans Day program in November on that we would normally do, because we're doing some other things in October. And I'm not saying that they would or should or what have you. I'm just saying I don't want to give an opportunity to do that or keep the door open on it. That's why I think November might be the better month to do that, because you can really just augment and put November out there as the month. Mm-hmm. One of the school districts in my district 4 years ago implemented at the middle school level, which I think is an excellent level to begin educating students about veterans and about military commitment and the like. And the school is very fortunate because they actually have some teachers, men and women, who are veterans, who that day will wear their uniforms and talk to the kids. We'll bring veterans in from our different veterans organizations who have a chance to visit. Last year, one of the students' father was there, who had been deployed a couple of times to Iraq and to Afghanistan, who spoke. And so I would hate to lose that kind of focus and opportunity on that day, where you can bring so many other veterans in, where it kind of gets diluted into a curriculum somewhere, where we could really just put the focus on the month of November. And I just guess I would ask the testifiers to maybe react to that assessment.
Dr. O'Fallon.
My quick reaction, and then I would like Krista to respond to it as well, is that the idea of picking the period of October between 9/11, where we have established a pretty significant award celebration that's quite a launch pad, which I'm going to ask one of our awardees to speak to in a moment, and it builds up towards, and I don't think would distract at all from November 11th. In fact, I believe it would deepen it. Mm-hmm. and complement it and add to it so that there's a longer period of information and discussion. But, Trista, would you please respond?
Right.
So, Ms. Matta Castillo.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, those are amazing contributions that are happening already in your school district that you've mentioned, and I would agree with Dr. O'Fallon is that it gives the opportunity to lead up. From the experience of the group down in Northfield that did this last year, it gave the students time to really prepare a remarkable ceremony that every student participated in, and so it gave them a little more time. Otherwise, you only have a few days prior to Veterans Day in November. And as we know, Veterans Day is November 11th. It's not a state holiday. It's not a Monday. It's November 11th, which has fallen on the weekend, it seems, quite frequently. So, you know, either way, the school district is already picking a different day to celebrate. And so I would say that it definitely would deepen and give them more time to really participate, because you can't read Tim O'Brien's book in the first 10 days of November and then have a deep conversation about it, about the things they carried, or another war literature book in those first 10 days. So that's why October.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I'm not opposing the idea. I'm just asking for maximum positioning and impact on it. And this event that the school district is talking about is something that I fought very hard with administration and teachers, and there's a teacher who's championing that, and the administration is behind it. And so I always make sure that I'm there that day to show my support for the efforts that were put forward on that and to participate in that. And they actually have to have two events because members of the public now are starting to join. So it's really catching fire on that, and I wanted to continue to do that. I don't want a district to say, well, with everything else, we've got other mandates that are in there and cloud this and dilute that and then say we no longer need to because we're spending a whole month and we're dedicating that. That is my biggest fear about taking it away from the month of November or choosing a different month that butts up right up against November.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, I attended last year's program and very impressed, and I support. I'm a co-author of the bill. But let it be known that there shouldn't be a day of the year that we don't honor veterans, really. And in terms of is there going to be a curriculum out there for schools to follow? Could you kind of relate to that?
Mm-hmm. Dr. O'Fallon.
Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, the idea of taking a month is that over time we could, in fact, build stronger educational resources. We're not going to prescribe necessarily exactly, you know, this is an invitation, if you will, to collaborate. But we will have then the opportunity, as we've done with other issues in the state from the Humanities Center, to develop resources, to build literature, to build the kind of multimedia resources, frankly, that a school could use if they chose to use it. Some of these seem to be lacking right now, as there have been in other areas of the state's education program. So I would think that over the next few years, mm-hmm. we would be able to add a resource base mm-hmm. to the school's efforts.
Yeah, Madam Speaker.
Representative Detmer.
Madam Chair. And I think at the meeting I had asked a question about maybe having a group of speakers that schools could call on mm-hmm. that are veterans that could come out to the schools and speak and address the student body at assemblies or whatever. Is this something that you're working on?
Dr. O'Fallon.
Madam Chair and Representative, the fact is, yes, we are. Mm-hmm. And we're adding literature, performances, a roster of speakers, and a network of leaders to what will be available. Mm-hmm. And would you like to respond
yeah.
as well, please?
Ms. Matta Castillo.
Yep, it's perfect, Madam Chair.
I've got it phonetically down.
It's perfect, ma'am. Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, we have, you know, the great thing about our Veterans Voices program is because it's filling a gap, veterans are coming out and really participating in a way that they haven't participated in the past in other mm-hmm. things, because it's non-confrontational. It's an opportunity to share their own stories. And so we have a huge network network already growing that we can tap into, that both we've done plays around the community with veterans who are now well rehearsed as amazing storytellers and performers. Plus, our Veterans Voices awardees have committed, all 25 have committed to be a resource for schools because it's that important to them. But not just schools and children, but community groups and groups within the community that want a further understanding and deeper understanding. So our network continues to grow, and we have a deep resource for speakers.
Representative.
Madam Chair, and do you see any organizations out there that might feel that maybe we shouldn't have these people coming into our schools and speak? I know a few years ago there was the Vets for Freedom that were traveling around the country, and they were scheduled to speak at a high school, and then there was an anti-war group that came in, didn't want that to happen. The principal then folded, and that didn't happen. So do you see any fallback on that?
Dr. O'Fallon.
Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, you know, there's likely to be something. I think you're right to predict that that might happen. And I think one of the benefits of the state making this declaration of support for an entire month of the Humanities Center contributing resources and time of building a network of veterans as leaders and entrepreneurs could help respond to people who don't want to hear this voice at all.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Newton, Representative Detmer, for getting this bill in front of us. I want to speak in support and what Representative Detmer just alluded to or very closely said what was something that I wanted to speak to. It's a request. And I could give you this request out in the hallway, but I'm choosing to do it here because I want more people to hear it. And that is to please go back in history and look at our veterans organizations, American Legion, VFW, and others, and their history, and how they strive to be nonpartisan, apolitical. And how we all know as veterans, we discuss issues sometimes quite robustly. And that's good. But when it comes time to put up or shut up, we put up. And that's the point, that we're here to do that. But there's quite a history there. I've got a file about that thick on my desk, and it stays right on my desk because I like to read it every now and again about what we went through with the American Legion, particularly with VFW after the Civil War, and how it got political. And they chose up sides. The Union and the Confederates chose up sides all over again. And they were marching toward something that wasn't good. And I just think it'd be good to integrate some of that into what you're going to teach folks about, because there's a lot of good importance and a lot to be learned. Right. Thank you.
You're hearing veterans' voices today.
Yes.
Representative Leidiger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to kind of bounce off of your comments, that's a great idea. Red Cross was created by an act of Congress in 1903, and that was, you know, based on the needs of the military, and that would be a great subject as well. Mm-hmm. I guess overall I want to say that I support this. I like this idea. But like Representative O'Driscoll, I actually think the month of November should be looked at a little bit more so than October. Mm-hmm. You know, prior to 9/11, we celebrated Pearl Harbor Day, December 7th, and we still celebrate that day in memory of the fallen. And you know, like you said, that happened in December, and I realized September 11th. You were looking at dates. Remember, you were arguing, hey, you know, maybe we liked October because it's closer than September 11th. But there's still a lot of people in this country that remember many of the events that have occurred in our history that are extremely important. And You know, there's, let's not forget what we do during Memorial Day in that Memorial Day weekend. This is all about remembering our fallen troops that have kept this nation from falling to pieces. Those were the people that gave up their lives, and that's what we're supposed to do on that day. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a lot of courseware that could be used throughout this throughout that month, mm-hmm. and roll in even the 4th of July and the Founding Fathers and General Washington and the many quotes that he that he has come up with that has helped guide our country. So there's a lot of information that should flow into this, because that's what a veteran is all about. I mean, that's when a guy goes in, or when a person goes into the military. This is the number one reason why they go in. They go in order to be a defender of our Constitution, to be a defender of our country. That's the number one reason. And I realize, yes, we have these GI bills and things like that, mm-hmm. that are there. But you go through all military people. That's the number one reason why they serve. And so, and then I'll just finish my comments by saying I liked what Representative Purcells was saying. Let's not forget these veteran service organizations and roll them in. And there's a lot of different ones. And I've said this before, that those that are affiliated with the military are going down in numbers as time goes on, as the population of the United States increases. And you've all probably heard me say this before. As the population increases, and we're sitting at around 330 million people, the percentage of people within our country that have served or even have anything to do with the military decreases. Mm-hmm. We're down around 5%, and we have families. You know, it used to be that almost every family in the United States had some sort of affiliation with the military. And now we have many families that don't know anything about it. Now, mm-hmm. now, what does that really mean? What does that translate into? Well, it translates into the will, the people's will to defend their country. And if you have people out there that don't know anything about it, they would just as soon fund a park bench than they would a tank, because they don't understand what one does and what the other does. I mean, it's just money to them. Okay? So this is important, that we teach our kids, more so than ever before, because we have this lack of knowledge in our country and what it's going to take on the battlefield in order to defend this country. People are going to have to know this. And those service organizations can help us, mm-hmm. help the general population know what it's like, know why it's important. Sorry, didn't mean to go on and on. Thank you.
And aren't we fortunate that we have the Humanities Center that is hearing the voices and putting together the curriculum? And if we have any more suggestions, they will welcome them at another time.
Right.
And aren't we all lucky that their materials that they are developing will be shared with anybody that asks, mm-hmm. across the state. Mm-hmm. And they have a wonderful website, mm-hmm. that is significantly helping teachers. Mm-hmm. And now they have a new employee, Miss Matta Castillo, who is focused like a laser right on those topics.
Yeah. Right.
And so I hope we get to hear a veteran's voice, but there are two more people that want to talk. So Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Definitely not a veteran myself, but a son, a member of the Sons of the American Legion, which is an important organization to continue the history and teachings of our Legionnaires and our veterans. Mm-hmm. So with the suggestion, I have a question to you, Ms. Matta Castillo.
Yeah.
regarding, and probably to you, Representative Newton, I certainly appreciate House File 2815 as opposed to the last one, 2557, so I commend you on a great bill. And I understand...
Not competition, Representative.
So I understand some of the concerns, but I think this could be a unique opportunity to educate our youth. And with that, the question is, and while I certainly don't pretend that we should be micromanaging our schools...
Right.
But in here, your bill says, Representative Newton, to encourage programs, I'm going to paraphrase, pick the words that I want to use to articulate, to encourage schools to hold programs to honor veterans and educate students of the unique culture of the military by sharing the veterans' experiences, stories, essays, poets, and art. So... how are you going to achieve that? Are you going to leave it up to the schools to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you going to encourage them with a list that you're going to develop through what the Madam Chair said through the Humanities Center,
mm-hmm.
With certain ideas and suggestions? And so just I wanted to hear some of the details of that. And certainly just a suggestion, and not that schools don't do this already, because I know our districts in Delano do, the art of film.
Mm-hmm.
And the art of filmmaking.
Yes.
Of course, we're in a media culture.
Yes. Yeah.
That's how we learn a lot from great films, Saving Private Ryan, for one. What's the other one? Steven Spielberg, Schindler's List.
Yeah.
So great films that capture the attentions of the student and anyone really that's interested. So they're a great form of art and a medium. Of course, being a photographer, I'm partial to that than the written word.
Yeah.
So, just to hear some of the suggestions and how you're going to handle that.
Absolutely.
Ms. Madica Steele.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. Those are really great comments. And, you know, we tried to include all forms, but there's so many mediums, we couldn't put them all in the bill of ways that we can learn about our history. And photography, obviously, is a really important one, as well as art in a lot of ways. And so we are encouraging all of those kinds of items. And, yes, we have a list of 100 different things already to read. So we have quite a resource guide already started for student teachers and students and community groups, because you know we know that this isn't just kids, but there's many people in the community that don't understand what a veteran is. For example, that women serve too. I get that a lot. And so lots of different things. And so, yes, we're going to have guides. We'll encourage teachers and school districts and community groups to do this, which we're very familiar with at the Humanities Center. We work a lot with educators and community groups in this kind of way that Dr. O'Fallon can speak to directly. So this is right in our wheelhouse and the kind of things, but we don't want to be prescriptive because, as was mentioned before, school districts have a lot of things that are told to them on how to do, but we find that positive encouragement with lots of resources gets kind of brings the bees a little bit better. So, Dr. O'Fallon.
And Dr. O'Fallon, I'm hearing that you're a resource for more than school districts,
mm-hmm. Yes.
And that Rotary Clubs and Kiwanis's and Lions and Junior Leagues and League of Women Voters and all kinds of groups,
yes,
can access your materials and so forth. I wouldn't want us to think that we're just doing this for kids or for veterans or for garden clubs. It could be for anybody that dials you in or dials you up or tunes you in or hears something from the humanities or goes to one of your programs or all kinds of reach outs that you're going to be doing.
Yep.
Representative Lesch.
I'll pass, Madam Chair.
Okay. Dr. O'Fallon.
Madam Chair and members, just with respect for your time as well, but
thank
the fact
you.
Is the Humanities Center works in collaboration with dozens of other organizations, and to the point about working with, whether it's the Legion or other established veterans organizations, we're a small shop. We don't have any authority. People only work with us because they want to, because they find something valuable. So literally thousands of people work with us because they find something valuable. That same spirit is what we will carry forward. Mm-hmm. Encouraging, connecting, collaborating, talking, and we work all over the state. And we have partners and alliances and collaborations with people all over the state, and that will continue. Although I grew up in Litchfield, so I'm a little nervous about Delano, but we'll include them as well. As we'll even cooperate there, Representative. Right. But certainly, that spirit. We don't have any authority. We have to be valuable. That's how we'll continue our work.
Is there anyone in the audience that came to talk about this bill?
Did we guess?
Oh, good. We have time for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Ryan Else. I'm a former non-commissioned officer with the historic 2 of the 135 Infantry Division with the Minnesota National Guard. Today, I'm an executive director of the Veterans Defense Project and a criminal defense attorney with Brockton D. Hunter. I received the inaugural award last year along with 24 other veterans, and it had a great impact in my life. I spend a lot of time away from my family helping the veteran clients that I have. I'm usually out the door before my kids are up and back after they're asleep. Having this award got some coverage in the Richfield newspaper where we lived, and the Montessori that my 5-year-old daughter attends ended up kind of highlighting the award and had a picture of me with the governor, and my daughter drew a picture of a soldier giving a salute, and then, which was supposed to be me, with a little stick figure of the governor with an award in his hand. I thought it was amazing that I got a full like cartoon and the governor got a stick figure. But beyond just my life, I've talked with other veterans who the problem that a lot of us face is on deployment. I was basically a mayor of 3 or 4 villages in Kosovo. I got to run my squad how I saw fit. I made sure people could go to and from school safely. I did a lot of really important things. And when I came home, my first job was in the Super Value freezer out in where you drive around on a pallet all day. And the fact that those important moments of my life had been kind of left behind was pretty rough. And I've been lucky. I've been able to kind of come back through where I'm doing things that are satisfying again. But for a lot of my fellow veterans, that is the accomplishment of their life. And to have their children and their family know about it, it's pretty valuable. So that's all I have to say.
Would you please repeat your name again?
Yeah, it's Ryan Else, E-L-S-E.
Thank you, Mr. Else.
Thank you.
A veteran's voice. Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I would like to renew my motion and recommend House File 2812 be placed on the General Register.
Any further discussion? All in favor of the Newton motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. O'Fallon, will you, Dr. O'Fallon, will you please stay? You have some exciting news for us as hosts of your committee, or as appropriators to your center. We want to hear your good news.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Very briefly, I have a chance to share some pretty exciting news in a couple of ways.
Although the last news was pretty exciting, too, about this program that Representative Newton's bill passed.
I think you can see the difference that this makes. I have, by the way, I don't have enough for everybody, but I have the award program from the last 9/11 event, and I'll make those available. And Ryan, of course, is in here. And again, this was a launch of a network of veterans as leaders and positive creators of our common future, if you will. So I'd be happy to share this. Ryan is in here. Two other pieces of news that I want to briefly mention to you, kind of coming out of this program, is a statewide commitment by the Humanities Center to hold conversations on the Constitution. We just think the Constitution is a fundamental document. A lot of people have never read it, so we've got 8 host communities already signed up to host conversations on the Constitution. that's going forward, and the communities range from Duluth to Rochester to Brainerd, the Somali community in Minneapolis, and more. And I will also just mention two other facts of the Humanities Center that I'm proud to share. That document that you have in front of you is sort of a quick look at things we're doing. I'm very pleased because we have an entrepreneurial spirit at the center. You give us a buck, we multiply it 3 or 4 times. So we actually go after whatever federal money might be available, private foundation money, support money. We're partnering with Wounded Warriors. We have foundations coming on board to support the award ceremony. There are at least 12 other entities that contributed money, time, resources, and so forth to support it. So we believe whatever resources you give us, we are responsible for partnership and leveraging so we can really reach the whole state. And then the story I really love to tell, I get carried away with this, you got to watch it, I'm sorry, but we work, again, the spirit of the Humanities Center is we work with communities. We're not telling people what to do. We're working with communities to meet real needs. Here's a real need. You're a recent Somali immigrant. You want to be fully involved in America. How can you bring your culture and your stories and your language into fruition here? Here's the way that happened. We worked with the Somali community. I can't give you one of these, each of you. I don't have that many left. But this is the capturing of original Somali stories from their culture in two languages, English and their language, that was never done before, created at the Humanities Center in consultation with the Somali community, distributed thousands of copies across the state of Minnesota, and then here's what I love to say. About 6 or 7 months ago, USAID called us up and said, would you give us permission to reprint 40,000 copies of that book you created so we can take it to Kenya? We said, well, we'll think about it. Now we said, yes, please go ahead and do that. And then very recently, an NGO called us up and said, would you give us the digital rights to this original literature so we can put it on iPhones, tablets, other smartphones, so people literally all over Africa and the U.S. can get this in a digital version. Because to the point that you made, Representative, many people now are reading on tablets or grabbing it on your smartphone or what have you, and we're checking out that NGO. So I want you to know something you supported in the beginning is, again, multiplying itself by literally hundreds, indeed thousands of times, and reaching more people. So that's underway as well. So again, I love being at the Humanities Center, and I want you to know we have a kind of a collaborative entrepreneurial spirit that guides what we do.
And there are other books that you're working on for children?
Madam Chair and members, there are many other books we're working on. I can't bring them all. I have one example of a book we just created with the Hmong community, written by young Hmong women, about what is it like now to be a third generation or fourth generation young Hmong woman. I'm Hmong, I'm American, I'm here, I have this history, how does it all work? They wrote their story. They're here, they're Minnesotans, they're Americans, and they have Hmong culture and heritage. This original literature, again, created with them at the Humanities Center. About 7,000 copies of this have now gone into communities, educators' hands, family hands, and schools across the country.
That is good news, Dr. O'Fallon. And we celebrate along with you and the users and the creators at the Humanities Center. We can have a little pride to be involved in this and to think of all those books, 50,000 books in Kenya, yeah, is one of the most exciting things that this committee has ever participated in my opinion.
Thank you, Madam Chair, very much. And I want to thank you and all the members for the support for the Humanities Center. Again, we take it seriously. The funding we get through this committee is the, if you will, the seed corn or something that helps us keep the doors open. It leverages much other funding, so it's very important to us. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for sharing with us.
Should I leave the programs from the 9/11 with members? Some members like to see these?
You sure can.
Okay. Don't have enough for everybody.
Representative Nelson, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the minutes, the approval of the minutes from the meeting of March 10th.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are approved as printed. Next meeting that we have is March 17th. This meeting is adjourned.